Hello, everybody. This is Amanda. Natalia, can you hear me?
I can, Amanda. Hi there.
Awesome.
What's it like in Hawaii today?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's definitely wet at this time of the year, but I'm also on the wet side of an island. But yeah, it's very nice. How's it in New York?
You know, look, it's December. It's kind of gray. The sun comes out every now and then. It's not that bad. Anna and I just went to a dance class and shaked our groove thing. So,
oh, fun. What kind of dance?
It was a jazz choreography, kind of hip-hop jazz thing.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It's great. We brought a little sunshine to the gray day.
Exactly. And I do have to say, there's something about New York at Christmas time that is just awesome. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a great vibe in the city. It's true. I mean, given the circumstances in the world, I mean, it's not what it's been in years past. There's definitely, you know, a bit of a cloud haunting things around here. But, you know, at the same time, everyone's trying to still stay in the spirit, the fleeting spirit. The last for two, you know, about a month or two.
Yeah. Oh, good.
But,
well,
yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for joining. And we have we need to stop at 1:25 Eastern today. So we're going to go ahead and jump in. Natalia and I wanted to cover a topic first before we go into some questions. And we've actually had some great questions. Just a reminder, we know there's spam on the Life Force Families board, and we're doing our best to keep up with it. The spammers are so crafty at getting their messages on the boards. But just so you know, we do look at the board, and we take questions from that for this call. So if you think of something mid-month and you want to post it on the board, don't be discouraged if you don't get feedback right away. We will do our best to cover as many questions as we can on this call, too. So just a reminder on that.
Yeah, such a huge apology about that spam. It's so ugly. And, you know, we'd have to create a lot of blockades, firewalls and things that would make getting in really hard if we were to guarantee no spam. So we have been through it, and we've considered different possibilities, and none of them have seemed to work as well as just leaving it open, unfortunately, thus the spam.
Yeah, but we go in and we clean it up too. So it'll look pretty here in a couple of days. But so Natalia, do you want to introduce the topic that we'd like to discuss first?
Okay. So this is something that is, I think, critical at this time of year, especially because families interface this time of year more than any other time of year. People who have learned that they may be better served if they live on the opposite coast, another continent away from their family, tend to have to kind of face up to their family connections around this time of year. So it seems a good time to bring up the topic of family patterns and breaking family patterns that have been in the lineage probably for generations, and how to heal them so that the life force can truly flow through families. And, you know, I'll just kind of bring my own history into it just for something of a starting point. You know, as much as my parents would have liked to have had this this perfect family home for us and, you know, nothing but joy and sweet things, there was a lot of acrimony in our family. And there are patterns that I can identify now that created those and kept those in place. And because my parents, with all their, you know, desire to give us a happy childhood, and, you know, we went to church and we did so many things that, you know, families do to, you know, we'd go on family dinners, and we'd sit around the table at home. We were a unit, but yet there was so much trouble. And there was more trouble in many cases when we were getting dressed up to go to church or sitting at the table together than there was at other times. So so in this, you know, desired perfect situation, there are all these troubles. And the troubles can be linked back to all of the patterns in the family line. So one of the things I discovered when I started to heal was that I would watch my relationship with my mother and my relationship with my daughter start to reflect each other. And what was amazing is that when I healed myself and then I had my daughter and my nuclear family and my mother a little bit further away, I would see that my relationship with my daughter was much better. And my when I was healed, I could understand and accept my mother so much better, which cleared the connection for me and my daughter. And these patterns that go through families they're so interlinked that when the self is healed, the center point is healed, and they can receive the relationship from the person that they struggled with, the relationships between them and their children immediately improve. And you can try this at home. It's like magic. If you can heal that relationship with the person that you have the most acrimony in with your family, you can heal the relationship that you have with your child. And now I'm not saying that, you know, my daughter and I had some sort of terrible relationship, not at all. It's just that in every parent-child relationship, there are some threads, and they're there because they're carried down from the lineage. If you know, we talk about coming in with clean blood and clean lineage, and if we don't, we wind up suffering symptoms very early on, and we have, you know, defunct organs and things don't operate the way they should. Well, in the same way, if we come in with lineage that carries compromised emotional stuff, then that is going to show up in our kids in various ways, not because, you know, they're born in some way wrong, but because we've given them a charge. We've created this charge that needs to be worked out in our family somehow. We cannot run away from it. And that is the key thing. We can't pretend it's not there. We can't go and think we're going to solve, you know, their problems by taking them to a therapist or, it's all about healing ourselves in the relationship with the family line behind us. And that clears the way for the line in front of us. I hope this is making sense.
So that was the first thing.
Okay, good. So that was the first thing that was an amazing epiphany for me and a breakthrough. I've seen it work time and again. And it creates the impetus for the relationship with that older parent, the parent behind us in our lineage. It creates the impetus for us to continue to improve it because we see the connection and we see that it's crucial. So I would see that there would be patterns. If I would fall out of that center and that center with my mom, the center would be lost my daughter. And at first I was like, is that really why it's happening? And I realized, yes, it is. I cleared it again with my mother, cleared it again with my daughter. It happened again and again. So basically, if we can identify the patterns in the problems in our family lineage, the emotional blockages, then we can heal everything. And if we want to be, you know, we talk about, you know, how can we feed our kids better? How can we get exposed into better things? Well, this is something that's so central to everything that comes forth from our children, that we have to solve that issue first. And just as an aside, since this relationship has been significantly healed and more so, it's not that my mother and I didn't want to, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, but there's a sense of, I think with so many children with their parents, there's a desire to have a perfect relationship. And some kids have it. Some kids and their parents have a seamless relationship. In most cases, there's some kind of charge. There's something maybe that your parent does that upsets you chronically. There's something that maybe they did in your past that you maybe haven't subconsciously fully forgiven them for. And there's these sort of knee-jerk reactions you have to them and things they say can set you off. I mean, there's so many charges. If ever there's a charge, you know there's something that needs clearing. So I was very charged by my mom for a long time. There were many things that she would say and do, as much as I wanted to just feel nothing but love for her. And until I worked out those kinks, I would keep walking into walls. And eventually, I learned to just, let all those things go, because they were just part of the story I was hanging on to. They were ways that I could, in a way, I guess, to mean her, because if I could stay mad at her, if I could stay kind of like condescending to her, then I wouldn't have to have an intimate relationship with her. And I guess, you know, at the end of the day, that's something that scares humans the most, is that deep intimacy, because you become open, you can't be judgmental, you can't use all the armor and the stuff that you used and have used in all your relationships to operate in the world, because that's kind of what we learn from, you know, age 3, 4 is we start putting on armor and using tools like weapons to protect ourselves emotionally. So so this intimacy, this real intimacy became possible. And when that became possible, the relationships just took on a whole new ability to conduct and to be honest. And so if she would say something that in some way it was not the way I wanted to hear it, I could understand where that was coming from in me, and I could communicate to her in a loving way and not, you know, and she would receive it that way and not feel like, you know, and in the past I would think I was presenting it in a loving way, but really I was charged, if I'm, you know, to be honest. So when this was truly cleared, the relationship became fresh, it became honest, wonderful. And then last night, I had the most amazing dream. When I was 15, or actually when I was 16, my father died. And a few times since then, I've had very vivid dreams of him. But in this particular instance, it was just the most astonishingly real experience. It happened in the middle of the night last night, and it was one of the most unforgettable experiences of my life in terms of encountering the spirit world. And it was like living life force, like just flowing light in the shape of my father. And when I reached through his sleeve to take his hand and feel his hand, I could actually feel his hand and the love from his hands. And the reason I mention this is because the power it held, the beauty it brought to me, was confirmation that my family line had been healed, that I was doing right by the universe. Whether it was him or it was the life force taking his shape as a symbol of confirmation, it was so incredibly real. And from that point, there is nothing to do but to just truly love your family members, no matter if they, you know, haven't solved their own problems yet, if they haven't fixed themselves the way you might like them to, if they haven't come to the things that you've come to interact with them where they are so you can be present for them. And this is something that we can all do. And this holiday period is an opportunity for all of us to actually practice that, because anything that we're doing outside of that is just going to keep us trapped and blocked, keep our future progeny trapped and blocked, and we can end it right now, in this very moment, just opening ourselves up to authentic, unconditional love for them and start to share with them without all our stuff connected to it. So I hope that sort of story, that little, you know, tidbit from my life is inspiring, but mostly I hope it serves as almost just like a prototype of what can be possible in your lives, because I can promise you that anything that you've experienced, and I'm talking, you know, all kinds of, you know, physical, emotional, other kinds of abuse in my family line, it's been there. It's been there from the financial to the sexual to the wrathful, the violent. It, you know, I don't think this is unusual to me, and I think I'm not shy to speak about it, because I think this is part of the human condition. It's something that everybody has experienced to some degree, and we need to kind of blow it out in the open in order to heal it across the board. So, sorry, Amanda, I'll hand it over to you after that long-winded bit.
No, I love it, and I'm thinking of ways to sort of break it down in terms of, you know, people that are knowing that there's patterns in their life with their family. The way that you can see these in your life, it's really simple, because it's reflected back at you. So any issues or challenges or problems that you are experiencing with your children, with your spouse, if you look at those, you normally can then look back and see the pattern with your own family. It's normally not something just out of the blue. If you can sort of get above it enough and take that bird's eye perspective and say, huh, you know, what's going on here? For example, I was noticing that my daughter was extremely reactive. I mean, she would just kind of, something would happen, and I felt like she didn't have the tools to really handle it with patience. But then when I looked at myself, and then when I looked back in my family, I was like, well, yeah, I mean, that is a total pattern that I've inherited, that she's inherited, that we are now given the opportunity to heal as a unit, you know, as a whole. So I think the first step is to see where those patterns are. And once you have that awareness, then I think that it becomes much easier, because what Natalia was explaining is a process of forgiveness and compassion, and knowing that anything that she was experiencing with her family and anything that any of us are experiencing with our family, it started a long time ago. I mean, it probably didn't start with our parents. It didn't start with their parents. You know, so it's if we can get into a position of compassion and understanding that, okay, these are just patterns. These are just programs. We don't have to personalize it anymore. It's not my dad. It's not my brother. It's a pattern. It's a program. Okay, so now I can take responsibility. Again, we said it last time, the ability. I now have the ability to respond and change that pattern. And so the wonderful thing is what Natalia said, that when she used the word magic, it does feel like magic, because it's very predictable that once you decide to step out of the normal pattern, once you decide to take a different action than you normally would have taken, so, you know, someone upsets you and normally you would bite at the bait and you'd get in a big argument and it would end in a blow up. Okay, if that's the normal pattern, and this time you say, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to let this person talk, and I'm actually not going to say anything. I'm going to step outside of that pattern and I'm going to listen. You know, so you choose a different action, and it has to result differently. It has to. There's no way that it won't. So it's beautiful. It works backwards. It works forwards. It works, and mostly it's working within yourself and choosing to respond differently, to take that very courageous act of forgiveness. And we all know that the only person that we're hurting when we're holding onto the grudge is ourself. It doesn't do anything to the other person. It just creates stress and anxiety and aging and disease inside of us. So, you know, hopefully that's a little bit of a summary there, but I think that this mm-hmm. is totally relevant for this time of year, as, you know, families get together and there are these triggers. It's okay, well, we can choose not to bite anymore at the old program, see it as a program, and know that we can transcend beyond that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Does anyone want to jump in on this topic? If you do, you can go ahead and press 2 on your keypad. Or if you want to ask another question, you can press 1 on your keypad. And we also have other questions that we took from the board and that people emailed in, so we can cover those too. But anything else you want to say on that, Natalia?
No, just, I mean, to use all the tools that you have for clearing yourself, the recapitulation, the recognizing the patterns, identifying them, you know, spending some time with it, because you just go through the same way you would clear something in yourself to clear the family line. And then you just really hold yourself accountable. As you said, you know, you take, you have the ability to respond, and there's no more, it's kind of like staying in cycles of overeating or staying in cycles of, you know, just eating out of, without awareness. It's the same thing if you're operating in cycles of unawareness and what's the term, disordered emotional responses. I mean, do you really want to stay in your spiritual childhood, in your sort of inability to grow your heart and clear things? Is that a happy place? It's not. It, you know, was it like Dr. Phil will always say, like, something must be working for you in that. And I think that's the one interesting thing I've heard him say. But the fact is that nothing's working for us when we're doing that sort of thing. It's just a familiarity. There's a a familiarity in going through the same emotional combat time and again. It takes you back to a place that is oddly comforting simply because it's familiar, but it's a perverse comfort. It's for us to teach our parents a lot right now. I mean, you know, most of us listening have older parents. My mom's turning 72 next month, and I think it's so beautiful that at this time she's open in a way I don't even think she realizes she's open. And I think that's true for a lot of older people. And I think we assume that because our parents have had this authoritarian kind of role to us for the most part, or, you know, in many cases for lots of kids, they were kind of a parent to their parent, that those roles need to stay the same, stay stagnant. But in effect, I think the older generation does look to the younger generation and think, you know, did you find something that we didn't see? And, you know, there's an openness that you shouldn't just assume that they're going to meet you with the same blinders. They might appear to, but if they see you responding differently, then and they see that they can't just play the same card, they're eventually either just going to stay away from you because they don't like the challenge, or they're going to kind of get a clue and want to work with you.
Totally. I've been absolutely shocked at this, especially with my father. I mean, literally shocked to see the changes and the openness and the receptivity and just this adjustment of our relationship from exactly what you just described, that authoritative figure to now, I mean, to a point where we were sort of meeting almost as peers when we were working together. To now, it's been so interesting to watch as he's turned to me as more of like a mentor, and so it's been an amazing journey to see, and it really has been a process of me just knowing that as the longer I stay in the truth of what I know to be true for myself, that eventually he'll sort of, or the world and all the people in my life will eventually, whether in this lifetime or another one, we'll all meet at the same place.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing I was going to mention is that if your parents are not alive, it doesn't matter. You can still have the same healing process with your parents, whether or not they're living. And Natalia's dream last night, the confirmation that you have of the spirit world being so real, because the healing is happening within you. Really, it can happen whether or not your parents are alive or anyone in your life that needs healing.
Yeah, and that is truly it is amazing the way that can happen, because it was as though there was just a timelessness in the whole thing. It was just the fabric of the universe was just healed.
Wow, that's awesome. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to a couple of questions. Let's see. Okay. Okay. So is it okay to, so for people that are pregnant, the question is, my question for you is this. I'm watching your video on first trimester eating. I had that same experience with my second pregnancy. Thus far, however, I continue to want my juices and salads, etc. Do you think I should keep juicing until dinner if that feels right, or should I try to add some fruit in? I was actually really ratcheting myself back the last 2 weeks following a systemic yeast cleanse, no wine, chocolate, or fruit, and I wanted to do that for one more week. Do you see any issues with that? So this person is in their first trimester pregnancy.
And they want to kind of keep
They want to keep what they've been doing, which is juicing until dinner, and they want to be yeast conscious, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. So taking out, obviously, wine, chocolate, and fruit.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the thing with the first trimester is remember that you're only, like, at this point, feeding yourself in a little bean. I mean, it's not like you're going to have some sort of massive appetite at this stage, typically. And there's absolutely no reason to include, if you have enough good things in your diet, you don't need to include everything. So, you know, if you're doing greens and green juice and raw vegetables and cooked vegetables and goat cheese and, you know, the occasional wild fish, be careful, of course, with, you know, too much fish with pregnancy. But if your diet is really varied in the, among the vegetable kingdom, you're set. You're good. You know, there toward the middle of the first trimester, there is usually a big desire for starchier things. So if that, you know, if that seems not to be an issue for you, then that's great. But, you know, adjust if you need to. You're not going to do any harm at all by staying put with detox women-friendly kind of approach.
Okay. Awesome. We actually get that question a lot, so that's
yeah, it's a good move. I mean, because what's going to happen is later on in the pregnancy, there's going to be so much pushing of the organs around, and usually when the intake of food increases with that, there's so much congestion, which can lead to a lot of bad bacterial growth. So if you can make sure that, you know, you minimize that by killing off as much yeast as you can, and not, especially not feeding more yeast in the early part of the pregnancy, then that will only make it easier as, you know, as you continue.
Okay. Now here's a flip side question. I'm 6 weeks pregnant and having a hard time with morning sickness. This is my fourth pregnancy and I have struggled with all of them. Pretty much every food and smell makes me gag, especially vegetables. I don't know what to eat. So she says, all I've been able to get down the past few days is a little fruit and spelt biscuits. The only things that sound appealing at all are super unhealthy, like Pizza Hut or Hostess chocolate pies. I really don't want to go there, but I'm so hungry all the time. The less I eat, the worse the nausea is. I can't even stand the thought of juice, green smoothies, blended salads, or salads, all of which are normally a part of my everyday. I feel like I've eaten a brick and my feet are swollen from all of the heavy, salty food I've been eating. So she's basically saying she can't eat vegetables, but the less she eats, the worse it gets. So,
yeah, but it sounds like she's really intoxicating herself with the wrong things, because her body's also not responding well, even though she may be eating salty, savory, kind of starchy, sweet things. Mm-hmm. So, the first thing to do is make sure that, I mean, if she's really going to be diligent with this, there can't be any of that nonsense. It's going to really wind up causing trouble down the line. It's not good for the baby. One thing I really just want to put a big alert around, just in general for everyone, but especially for pregnant mothers and people feeding kids, is the GMO problem.
Yeah.
You know, don't look at Hostess and Nestle or even, you know, Cashew now and all these brands as any, don't think of them anymore as like, oh, it's a taboo because they're, you know, there's bad ingredients. It's a taboo because they're tumor forming. The GMO foods are creating massive tumors in lab rats. And if you look it up, you can see the pictures. They're horrifying. We have got to stay away from GMO foods, especially
Natalia,
during pregnancy.
This is crazy. I mean, this just brings up for me the food at school, because even at my daughter's sweet little, you know, Waldorf Kinderhalle, they have better ingredient food, but most of it's not organic. So, I mean, this is like, wow. I mean,
it's
everywhere
major.
You turn.
Yeah. In fact, you know, it's funny because there are always these new little gourmet food stores opening up in New York, and we have a new one opening around the corner. And I just think to myself, what this city needs, what every city needs, what every town needs, is an exclusively no GMO store. Like,
yeah.
Forget every other kind of label. Forget health food, raw food, organic, da, 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 da. It should just be no GMO.
Ding, 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 out there. Anyone who wants to open up non-GMO
Seriously.
Stores is a great business idea for you. Wow.
It's become the thing that we have to watch out for. So, you know, it'll also help just kind of put in and just take all this stuff that people have, you know, kind of their little addictions to and their weaknesses for, just put them in a big pile and shove them to the side, because they're not allowed at the party anymore at all. Not because, you know, there's sugar in them or because there's a stick of butter in them, but because they're cancer. You're just eating cancer. So just don't do that. I mean, there's got to be a point where we draw the line. You know, I totally appreciate wanting to get your needs met. So with that said, put on your baker's hat and your baker's apron and get in the kitchen and pull out the spelt flour and the almond milk, and if you want the organic butter and all the great ingredients, the coconut oil and the chocolate chips, GMO-free chocolate chips, and just start baking away. Make yourself pancakes with maple syrup. Make yourself blueberry muffins. Make yourself, you know, chocolate chip cookies, chocolate chip pancakes, whatever you need to do to have the best ingredients for these types of foods that you're feeling so desperate for now. If the option is a Hostess, what do you call it again? The Twinkie Ding Dong, the ho-ho. Okay, yeah. Whatever it is. Find a way to get that met in your perfect GMO-free, organic, high-integrity grain and dairy products. Mix them together and make yourself something lovely. But just don't go there. There's got to be that line in the sand. And then the other things I find really helpful with pregnancy are the Kamut Puffs. You know, those bags of Kamut Puffs, they're great. Mm-hmm. Even if you wanted to get the GMO-free corn puffs, again, you know, the other issue is that it's kind of like saying that fish is wild, but in effect, like, fish are in the ocean, and then the oceans are contaminated. So, you know, it almost like, would you want fish swimming in New York City? You know, they're wild. They might be wild, but they're, you know, if New York were underwater. So, you know, the non-GMO corn is getting infested, unfortunately, with the GMO corn because there's all the cross-pollination. And, of course, we all know the story of the farmers being sued by Monsanto because their seeds are being, you know, it's all this cross-pollination is creating like a seed crime that the farmers are having to pay the price for, even though they don't want those, you know, disgusting seeds in their soil. So, long story short, that's just a big thing to look out for with corn. You kind of wonder, is it even non-GMO corn if it says it's non-GMO corn? But the corn puffs are yummy if they are indeed non-GMO. And then things like the Kamut rice cakes, the puffs, the Kamut rice cakes, the salty ones, savory ones by Susie's, anything like that is really great because you're using a high-quality grain, and when it's puffed, it has that airy, crunchy quality. Even popcorn will probably taste okay if you get non-GMO popcorn kernels, and you can pop them at home. I love popping popcorn at home for my kids. I do it the old-fashioned way in the pan. It makes the whole house smell amazing. You can put a little coconut oil at the bottom of the pan, and then line it with the cover it with the popcorn, and then cover it, let it get hot on the skillet, and then just pops like, you know, it's great. So
wait, what do you cover it with? You just put the popcorn
a big pot, not actually
in a big
skillet,
pot.
Yeah,
but
like
do you have to cover the pot?
You cover the pot, and you put it on high heat. You let as soon as the kernels get really, really hot, they start popping. And then it's really fun because they just pop, 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 pop. The kids love watching it. And then I fill a giant brown bag with popcorn, like a big tub of this popcorn. They put some sea salt on it and, you know, go to town. So
yeah. Okay.
It's fun. But that's kind of a nice thing when you're feeling like that nausea in first trimester that's going to keep you light.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think a lot of it's also the mental conditioning around nausea and keeping a full stomach and feeling also like you're pregnant and you are entitled to eat, you know, even when people don't want to go down that road and play that card, they kind of do. So,
well, again, it's a program.
Yeah.
It's a program, so that you probably will at least hear it in your head, even if, you know, so yeah. Okay. Okay, good. Let's see. My baby is 1 month old and is having many pimples breaking out on cheeks, on her face. What can I do in my diet to stop and or prevent her from having this breakout?
Well, it can happen in a lot of different ways. It could be that when they're sleeping up against you and you're sweating, if that could be. I don't know if there's just, you know, my kids always kind of like slept up in my armpit. They didn't get the pimples, so thankfully it wasn't that offensive for them. But, you know, I can imagine when you're that close that it could agitate the skin a little bit. If it's just coming from, you know, the open air, it could be that they're just pushing stuff out that's already in them. If it's a 1 month old baby and it's exclusively breast milk, It could be, I don't know if there's, you know, what the water is like. If they're getting, if they're being given water, they might be a little bit dehydrated. So you can always give babies water. You know, use the Mountain Valley Spring, you know, glass bottles, where, you know, the best quality water you can get. And it could just be that there is, you know, all breast milk in the modern world is going to be toxic to a certain degree. So, you know, it could be a phase. I would watch it and see if it just goes away. If your diet really is as good as it can get for nursing, then it may not be something you can help that easily. It might just be that, you know, the baby's very sensitive to the environmental pollution and different things. It could even be something in your detergent, in the baby's detergent, even if it's just appearing on the face, that can happen. There's any number of things. I mean, if there's something obvious in your diet that you know you're doing that could be an offender, then, you know, you haven't shared that with us, so I don't know what that could be. If it's, again, the Ho-Hos or the Twix or something, or what are those things called, Twinkies. But if it's genuinely that you're doing organic fruits and vegetables and the highest quality grains, goat cheese, that sort of thing, maybe a little bit of dark chocolate, maybe there's too much chocolate in the diet for the baby. If you've gone back to having some wine and you weren't drinking during pregnancy or something like that, that could affect it. You know, there could be some little detail in your life that you haven't noticed. And of course, if there's any kind of formula or anything, that would be the obvious offender.
Yeah.
What do you think, Amanda? Anything comes to mind?
I can't remember, Sophia, but anyways, I feel like this for me, when I remember when my daughter had this, it was like, oh my gosh, she has pimples on her face. But they went away. It lasted like a couple weeks, and it really wasn't a big deal. It was more like an ego thing for me, I think, that it was, you know, I have this adorable little baby that has pimples all over her face, and it was just kind of hard for me to, I wanted to know if, you know, there was something wrong, but I also think it was kind of, it was a little bit of a superficial thing for me. So I don't know if that too, and it went away. It felt like a big deal. I remember for like 3 or 4 weeks, and then it was gone. So
mm-hmm. I think it is quite common for that to come up in that stage, actually.
Yeah. Well, if you think, I mean, and I've noticed too, anytime anything is introduced into one of my daughter's diets, it comes right out in her face. Like and I'm the same way. I mean, it's just basically that's where one of the places where our body likes to eliminate anything, any sort of toxicity. So, it was definitely a short lasting phase. But then I do notice it now when, if she's had anything that isn't ideal for her body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so after a heartbreaking miscarriage and then taking longer than expected to conceive, my husband and I are anxious to have a second child. Our son is 4.5 months, exclusively breastfed, and I'm not on birth control. Without weaning, even night weaning, has anyone tips to share on conceiving while nursing? I haven't had a menstrual cycle return. Even if you don't have tips, do many of you have acquaintances who have gotten pregnant while nursing? Stories like that give me hope. Thanks in advance.
So her son is only 4 months old?
Yeah, 4.5 months.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty early to want to conceive again.
I'm reading into it and thinking she's concerned about age, her age.
Yeah, I wouldn't use that. I wouldn't worry. You know, age doesn't affect us in the same way. First of all, pull out that programming. I mean, yes, there is an ideal time for women to have babies, and, you know, there is something of a biological clock, but I would much rather see a person heal completely from pregnancy, you know, not even consider conceiving for the first 9 months of their first child's or their latest child's life before conceiving again, then rush into it before they're fully healed, before their body is really, really back, because they're worried about the clock ticking. It's only going to undermine things. We want to have children with a really strong constitution. That's not going to happen unless we have a really strong constitution, our partner does, and the way we engage sexually is coming from a place of mutual love and strength. So find that point of power. What do you want? What kind of power do you want to pass down to your next child? And instead of just focusing on getting pregnant again, it's kind of like, focusing on the wedding but not the marriage. So think about the bones you want this child to have, the brain, the quality of the organs. Kids need to be robust in today's world. And bringing a child in that soon after just having had another child is a bit of an insult to the female body. It may sound a bit severe, but that's what it's pushing the divine feminine when she doesn't want to be pushed. And that never has a good result. So I would say just take a breather. Focus on how you're going to strengthen yourself, your husband's going to strengthen himself, and the two of you can consciously create this baby. And then when the time is right and you've gotten there, and that could be at 9 months, when your baby's 9 months old, it could be, in a year and a half, then you can see from that point, because you'll all be in a stronger position, which, of course, is going to be the making of your next baby. As for conceiving when you're nursing, that's entirely possible. We often ovulate even with the absence of our menstrual cycle, with the absence of evidence of our menstrual cycle, I should say. So it's typical not to get the cycle back for quite a while for a lot of women. I know my baby's 9 months. What's the date today? The 12th. It was 9 months a few days ago, and I still haven't got my cycle back. She's been nursing intensively though. She sort of slurps all night long.
But, I didn't until 13 months, Natalia.
You didn't? Okay. Yeah, I think it's very common.
Yeah.
But we do take precautions against pregnancy because I know it. It can show up any time, and you don't know when you're ovulating and when your next menstruation is going to come. But it is entirely possible. We've heard of Irish twins many, many times.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing to think about in this scenario, well, there's a couple things that come up for me. It's that trusting in the innate wisdom of the body. I mean, there's a reason why this individual's body is not wanting to get pregnant again right away. So, like you said, forcing that is probably not ideal or will not result in the most ideal of outcomes normally. And then also, what about the new baby? Because a four and a half month old baby, and I mean, the infants require so much from us, and so I think that it's built in that we don't normally get pregnant again right after, because they require so much of us. And that's, you were saying, Natalia, that solid constitution, that solid foundation, that's also true for the first baby that's been born, that spending time focused entirely on that child will also give that child some strength to then, someday be a big brother or big sister. But, it's feeling kind of forced on every level. So just something to think about too. And not that having children close together, is not always a great thing, but if her body's obviously not wanting to get pregnant anyways, there's probably a reason for that right now.
Yeah, it sounds like there's too much anxiety around the what ifs and needing confirmation that it will all be okay. We have to trust the universe a little bit. We got to kind of give it a chance to surprise us and not ruin all the good surprises.
Right, exactly. Okay, let's see. Does anyone have any questions, anyone that's on the phone? We did have a question come in about our earlier topic. If you have a question, you can either enter it into the dashboard online. If you go to the reminder of this call, you'll see a link. You can click on that, and you can type in a question, or you can press 1 on your keypad, and we'll give you the chance to speak that way. But another question that came in about our earlier topic is, how the concepts we were talking about apply to in-law relationships. For example, how to heal charges between me and my mother-in-law and father-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. I think you and I could both speak to that. The issues around that come from judgment, because we feel judged by them, and there's a need, it goes back to the armor, a need to protect ourselves from that sense of judgment that we then project on them, this sort of, the way we relate them, we keep them in arm's length. There's a lot of programming around in-laws anyway, that there shouldn't be like good feelings there, which is, crazy. Of course there should be, and there can be intimacy there. I think, I certainly speak from experience, when I say that my relationship with my mother-in-law at first was fraught with not a lot of kind of animosity, but certain tension that, you know, to live up to what she envisioned for her son, and feeling judged and worried about feeling falling short of that because I wanted her approval so badly. And, you know, and as we both got older, we moved into a greater appreciation of each other, where that was just released. And it was a really wonderful thing because we never actually let the typical relationship that was kind of set up to exist. And I think we were both in our own way wanting something more from each other. And I think, you know, I took a few steps in her direction in a kind of to jump out of that setup. And I think she was kind of thrown by it in a really good way. I think it was disarming because she wasn't expecting to feel an authentic hand reaching out to her. I think she was used to kind of conditioned relationships and it was expecting one in this setup as well. And I knew I didn't want that. And she, I think, surprised herself when she realized that she didn't want that either. And we wound up having, you know, the most wonderful 20-year relationship, you know, to this day, because we both just opted out of that. So, you know, that's sort of my experience with that. But again, I identified something. I saw something happening in myself. I was very quick to take responsibility for the way I was playing out that role, and saying, you know, I don't really want to play that role. And it turned out she didn't either want to play it either. So that was really refreshing. But yeah. Amanda, you want to speak to it a little bit?
Yeah, well, I would just say play around with that concept. Play around with the concept of every time you feel a charge, whether it's frustration or anger or sadness or impatience or jealousy, just notice when you feel those things and ask the question, what program is showing up in me? What needs to be healed right now? Because once you take that really big step of stopping the finger pointing outside of yourself and pointing the finger right back at yourself and saying, okay, what's going on within me right now? Why am I feeling this charge? And know, again, that charge is not your authentic self. That charge is the conditioned self. So I say point the finger back at yourself. It's not even really pointing the finger back at yourself. It's pointing your finger at a program, at a conditioned reaction. But taking responsibility, saying, okay, what needs to be cleaned? What needs to be cleared? And when you just sit with those questions, you will receive answers to those questions. Whether it's in the form, whether it's, you know, within a formal meditation process or driving in your car, just having a moment of silence or a moment of quiet where you're honestly asking the question, okay, my mother-in-law just did that and it's driving me nuts. It's driving me crazy. Okay, what program is showing up in me? What conditioned reaction is showing up in me right now? Where does this need healing? Sit with that and see what comes, because you'll get the answer. Either it'll be an insight or, you know, an intuitive knowing, or you'll be in a conversation with another person that tips you off to what it is. It's the answer will come. You just open yourself up and be receptive to that. And the process with the in-laws is the same as the process with your own family. And it is really just that noticing when the charge comes up, taking responsibility for it, knowing that that's not your authentic self, nor is it the other person's authentic self that is creating this conflict or this rub, whatever you're experiencing. So that for me has been the one, like, key. I remember when someone said to me, whenever you're having that charge, whenever you're having that charge, that's a program that needs to be clean and cleared. There's conditioning there. There's programming there. Just sit with that for a while. And that was months of me sitting with that and really being like, wow, it comes up all the time. That's happening all the time. So, and then it's this process of clearing and cleaning that does get better over time. And then you get to that point where Natalia got, where she can authentically reach out her hand. There is no program behind that. There is no conditioning behind that. There isn't, you know, all of this expectation or need for approval within that hand going out. It, she could come from that authentic place only after cleaning and clearing the conditioning that needed to be cleared.
Yeah, exactly. And you get to a point, and this is the point you have to reach before this is going to be successful, is that you just don't want to operate on that level anymore. You just don't. There's nothing there for you anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can either just get irritated by, you know, the mother-in-law or father-in-law says something that just sets you off. You're like, I can't believe I just did that or said that. And then you can be like, do I want to be in conflict? Like, do I really need to go back into that? Do I want to spend my life, like, being so bothered by other people's actions? Do I want to be like a leaf?
Puppet.
Like, right, like just blowing in the wind, like wherever the wind takes me that day? Or do I actually want to be the tree rooted in the ground and growing up toward the sun and, you know, growing my own leaves? And, you know, it's just a much happier, more empowered, creative place to be. Otherwise, you just really spend your life spinning your wheels.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, that desire to change would be even the step before you can have that awareness to notice your own charges.
Yeah, and they know what they're. I mean, if they're doing it maliciously, if it's somebody who's. I mean, the scenario can be that there's like, you know, say, you know, you're kind of the mousy one, and you're kind of afraid of conflict, and so they take on the role of the bully because they can. You know, that there's at some point you're maybe the issue is that you need to learn how to stand up for yourself, and you don't want to. You don't want to play the role of the mousy one anymore. It's not who you are, and just because you want to live a life without conflict doesn't mean you won't stand up when you need to,
right,
and create the boundaries you need to have. But people, you know, sometimes these people like to be bullies, and it's kind of like the, you know, the policeman who has like so little power in his life, but on the job has a ton of power, and so, you know, they act out of turn, and they, you know, are aggressive and give tickets to people who shouldn't have tickets, and they, you know, just use their tasers on people who shouldn't be tasered and all this. But, I mean, that's because they're just so empty in their own private life. They have no power there. So if you're feeling bullied or you're feeling condescended to, or people who are in their own power, that quiet power, they don't need to bully. They wouldn't want to. They don't need to condescend to someone. That would make them... they would be so acutely aware of that, it would feel gross. So when people act this way, they're either completely socially inept and they just are blind to their own behavior, which is, you know, you can just forgive them that, or they're deliberately trying to be hurtful, in which case it's because there's such an emptiness inside of them, there's such a lack of inner power and inner strength. And so in that, you can just kind of also let them just do their thing, but if you don't respond to it, they lose their power, and it doesn't work for them anymore. So they lose that sense of having one up on somebody because,
totally,
you know, you're like, okay, cool, see you next week.
Exactly. Well, it's the difference between reacting and responding. If you find yourself reacting, you're engaging in the program. If you're able to respond, like you're saying, you're talking about responding from an empowered place. If someone's bullying you around and you're reacting to that, then you kind of get up in a tizzy and, you know, it's this tizzy thing. But if you respond to it from an empowered place, then yeah, that's a completely different, and you know the difference in how that feels. I mean,
yeah, and respond doesn't actually mean having to have words either. I mean, often people,
right,
you know, associate the two.
A response could be to walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
and the response can even be to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I don't. It depends on what it is, what the appropriate question would be at that time. But you know, if bullies often just shrink back when they're questioned. If you say, "What do you mean by that?" or you know, I'd like to help you with this. I think I need to understand it better. You know,
right,
if they're being, you know, it's kind of putting it back on them, instead of just taking it on yourself and feeling like you need to in some way, you know, have the conversation they want to have. You don't have to have the conversation they want to have.
Exactly. And you could say, you know, I'm especially with the in-law thing, I think, you know, if a comment is made, you could say, you know, I feel like when you say that I feel sad. You know, I feel sad when you say that. Is that really what you meant? Because so many times it's just, again, we're carrying all this baggage with us, and so we're filtering that, whatever someone's saying, through, you know, our perception. And maybe they didn't mean it like that at all. Maybe they've never meant it like that at all. You've just always taken it that way. So that asking that question, you know, hey, when you say that, are you meaning this, or are you meaning something totally different? Because this is the way that I just took that. You know, I think that clarity in communication can solve or can heal years of wounding.
Mm-hmm. And there's some things we just need to let go of. Mm-hmm. Like one of the big things for me was, and just to bring up my mother's thing again, the charge that she would drive me crazy with was the right-wing Christian coalition Jesus thing. And, you know, I was raised in that. I feel like I had the chance to, after years and years and years of just like, you know, purging myself of the anxiety that brought with it for me as a kid. And, you know, so when she speaks that language, when she would speak that language, in her own way, I think, you know, she's super, super spiritual. But to me, it would devalue her spirituality when she'd use this kind of terminology, this happy clapper thing. And so, you know, I learned that the way I'm interpreting what she's trying to say, because of the language that she's using, it's just charging me all, like, in all kinds of crazy ways. Instead, I just listen to her and let her use her lingo, and I don't see it anymore as something that's bothersome. It's just the way she communicates. And so the way I communicate with her probably, you know, has a similar effect. You know, she doesn't like the fact that she used to, you know, hate that I would, you know, study shamanism and a lot of, you know, different occult things through my explorations. And in many times, if something would go wrong in my life, she'd throw that back at me. And, you know, it would be very hurtful, you know, because it was just so... there's such a war of the worlds, you know? And so I think if, you know, in accepting a family member fully with unconditional love, you have to get to the point where you can really let them speak their language and not let that be the point of contention, because you're never going to get beyond it to a real relationship if you're struggling over somatics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way somebody wants to communicate with it. And then once I got over that, I could actually hear a lot of the things that she was trying to communicate to me. And I realized that they made sense. Like the things that she was saying, when I could understand them the way she meant them from the heart, and I could put them through sort of my little translator, I was like, yeah, wow, we totally, I mean, we're talking about life force here.
We're probably talking about many of the same things.
Yes. So there was a beautiful kind of bridging there, and now she can speak her language, I can speak my language, and we can communicate. We can conduct, you know, verbally, which is lovely. And it's, you know, and that verbal communication doesn't impede our heart communication and make us, you know, in my case, like maybe feel like I just don't want to communicate anymore. Yeah. So it's so incredibly liberating. And then these places where you thought there were blocks, there's no blocks. So what is there? There's conductivity, there's life flow, there's new energy in the relationship. And, you know, and then again, it's just the evolutionary spiral, and that flows right down through the generations. This is a gift we're giving to our grandchildren, you know, because then we pass on to our children, and they don't have these charges, and, you know, they're not. It's cleared from the family line. Done deal.
Awesome. Yep. Love it. Well, I know you have to go, Natalia, and thank you, everyone, so much for joining, and have a great holiday season. And our next Life Force Families call will not be the second Tuesday in January. It'll be January 15th. So just mark your calendars for that, and we'll look forward to seeing you or talking to you all in the new year.
Yeah, let us know if these kinds of discussions are, you know, are helpful as well, and if you have stories you want to share. I think people would really be motivated, inspired by the questions from the group. So, yeah, or rather the testimonies from the group. And maybe if you have success, you will have success over the holidays in a new way. You want to share that with us, and we can share it with the group in our next call too.
Yes, awesome.
Okay, love to everyone.
Everybody.
Amanda, thank you so much.
Thank you, Natalia.
Until next time.